Good morning, everyone. Just a note, this service is being recorded, and also, I think we've got plenty of room in the back, so I won't mention that part. Our prelude to welcome in this space is entitled Bori by Partita in E major by Bach and performed by Amber. Hopefully I pronounced all those things correctly. Thank you, Amber. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Reverend Matt Aspen, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as the current contract minister here, at least for the next year, and hopefully long beyond. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, though we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us and how we perceive others. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying, to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. We have a few announcements this morning. For the third quarter of 2022, Prairie will share its offertory collection with Wilma's Fund, which provides assessment and assistance for LGBTQ+ people who are experiencing homelessness, as well as support to prevent homelessness in this population. This fund was established in 2011. Please save the date. This is a big announcement. I'm sure you've been hearing about this, but on September 25th, we are having a building dedication service, followed by a festive fall fair welcoming Prairie folks and the wider community with open house tours, fun activities, food, and a raffle. This would be a great time to invite your friends if you've ever wanted to share with them what this place is all about. We want to get as many folks here as we can and fill up this place and really make a festive, festive day. And finally, the Social Action Committee will meet in the annex, the building next door, after the service. It says we may meet outside, weather permitting, and we'll have snacks if the rules permit. I just told them we can have snacks. The COVID numbers, thankfully, are coming back down again, and so we're going to see about all that. This is the first meeting in a while, so if you're considering joining a Prairie community, come and check them out. Our chalice lighting today is by Linda Lee Franson and will be read by Barbara Chatterton Fry, who uses she, her pronouns.
We light this flame to ignite our hearts and minds, the spark of knowledge that enlightens, the shimmering hope that burns, the blazing love that engulfs our actions, the bonfire of our commitment. We light this flame for those who celebrate themselves, who fear, who hope, who persevere, who stand on the side of love for all. We light this flame for those who have been ridiculed that they may find peace, for those who have fought to marry that they may celebrate, for those who live in uncertainty in the world that they may have hope. We light this flame to renew our commitment that no one shall ever again suffer for the right to love. We light this flame to celebrate our kaleidoscope of diversity, working, loving, and living on the side of love. For this, we light the flame.
Our opening music this morning is Love Knocks and Waits for Us to Hear, which is number 1029 in this book, which you may be able to find in the back of your, or under the seat in front of you. Amber will play once through for us, and then we'll start singing. And you're invited to stand if you're willing and able to help open up the lungs a little bit, and let's really sing out loud. Thank you, Amber. Now it is time for, I think, one of the most important parts of our service. It's our story for all ages. This morning, Alice is going to be showing us the Rainbow Parade. And we welcome adults as well as kids to come forward and get a good view of the pictures while we listen to our story. And after our story, we'll sing them out, and they're going to go have some fun together. So come on up, everyone.
All right, good morning. The book is called The Rainbow Parade. Today is the Rainbow Parade, which means that we get to ride on the train. The cars start out empty and gray, but slowly, stop by stop, the whole train fills up with rainbows. Do you see those fairies, Mama says? I think they're going to be in the parade. The rainbow fairy winks at me. My eyes grow wide. Whoa, I whisper. The sidewalk outside is filled with people waiting for the parade to start. Everyone is wearing whatever makes them feel like themselves, even if that means wearing hardly anything at all. We search through the crowd until we find our family of friends. Happy Pride, Brenda, Mama says. Happy Pride, Jen, says Mommy. Happy Pride, Tigger, I say. Everyone laughs, except for Tigger. He's a dog. Then we sit, and we wait, and wait, and wait, until even the grown-ups are tired of waiting. Finally, we can hear the motorcycles roaring down Market Street. The parade is here. Honk, beep, vroom, vroom. There are so many people in the Rainbow Parade. People juggling, people marching, people singing, people dancing, people chanting. But there are three things all the people in the parade have in common. They are extra loud, they are super proud, and they are very colorful. The Rainbow Fairy Queen gives out rainbow candy, stickers, and plastic necklaces. When she gets to me, she says, "Look at those moms. Honey, you have so much to be proud of. Y'all should be in the parade." Us? In the parade? I don't know about that. Besides, I love being on the sidewalk. We clap and we cheer and we smile. Sometimes we dance to music, other times we watch quietly and think, and a lot of times we almost catch a free t-shirt, but not quite. "So close that time," says Mama, but Mommy isn't listening. "Look who's up next," she says. "Do you see, Emmy? They are all just like us," says Mommy. "Just like us?" Then Mama hops over the fence. "Come on, Emily, let's join in." Oh no. I try to imagine myself like the people in the parade, but I can't. "Are you ready, Em?" says Mommy. I can feel my face getting hot. I don't know, maybe I'm not loud enough or proud enough to be in the parade. I think I still belong on the sidewalk, I say. "What?" says Mama, with wide eyes and a smile. "You belong in the Rainbow Parade just how you are." "So true," says Mommy, "but it's okay to feel nervous. Sometimes finding your pride takes a little practice." "Let's go," said Mama. "We can practice as a family." "Okay," I say. And I take Mama's hand. The three of us start to walk in the parade. We wave and the crowd waves back. We wave bigger and walk prouder and the crowd cheers. As the parade comes to an end, I look around at all the people on the sidewalk, at all the friend families, all the parents, and all the kids. They aren't juggling or dancing or marching, but they all are still so loud, so proud, and so colorful, just like us. "So what did you think of the parade, Em?" Mommy asks as we ride the train home. "I think I'm going to practice pride all year long," I reply. "Me too," says Mama. "Me three," says Mommy. And we do. The end.
Ask the dog you're wearing something.
Yeah? Why are you wearing rainbows?
That's silly.
Well, the best thing now is we get the opportunity to, like, practice our prideful march out the door here while we sing songs proudly here. All right, here we go. Bye, kids. Have fun. We'll now have a moment of silent meditation to reflect on what we've heard so far and prepare our hearts, minds, and souls to listen to the important words that are going to be shared by our friends that are here from Wilma's Fund. Our presentation today is titled Wilma's Fund, Working to Address Homelessness and Housing Insecurity Among LGBTQ+ People in Dane County by our guest AJ Hardy, uses he, they pronouns. And it relates to our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. AJ? Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to come and speak. Just a little bit about myself. I want to introduce myself. My name's AJ. My pronouns are he, they. And just so you know, my kind of perspectives and biases that I bring to the table, I'm a trans masculine non-binary person. And depending on the day, I either say I'm queer or gay. So today it's a little bit of both. Can you go to the next one? So I'm the program director at Outreach, and actually this didn't come up when I was invited here, but I was raised UU, so coming here on a Sunday morning feels, there's a lot of like nostalgia, a lot of kind of coming home. So my family, we went to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Charlotte in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I was raised. And I really do like credit my UU upbringing with instilling in me a lot of the values and the principles and commitments to social justice that I carry through to this day, and that led me or kind of helped me feel called to the work that I do at Outreach. I moved to Wisconsin in 2013, so I've lived here for almost 10 years now. And I originally moved here, like so many people, for school, and then fell in love with Madison and decided to stay. And then, especially as I became more integrated into the community here, and especially outside of the university, really that in concert with coming out as transgender, being a part of the trans community with everything we've been through for the last ever, but particularly the last few years, kind of galvanizing and becoming a lot more active in the community during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020 really led me to work outside of academia and to work in social justice in particular and in community services. So I want to share with you a little bit about Outreach for those of you who aren't familiar. Outreach has, in one form or another, so as we have parent organizations in Madison, but we've existed since 1973. So Outreach and our parent organizations have been serving the community here for a really long time. And we are really a space for everyone in the community. So we have three staff. I'm kind of wearing two hats right now as program director and trans advocate. But we also have people who work with folks that are struggling with alcohol and other substance use concerns. And then we have our senior advocate, Christy, who works with folks that are over the age of 50 and part of the LGBTQ community and does a lot of work with the 50 Plus Alliance in Madison, which is a LGBTQ group that works with Outreach and the Madison Senior Center. We also offer a lot of LGBTQ kind of cultural competency trainings. We do a lot of community education events, even just posting things on social media has become a big part of what we do lately. We have social and support groups. right now. So we have a lot of groups that are meeting hybrid, some in person, others virtually, some both. And those are all built around kind of increasing our connections with our community, because especially during the pandemic, when everything was closed down, a lot of us felt really isolated, and that was kind of made worse for a lot of LGBTQ people, especially those in rural areas that didn't have that sense of community in the first place. So those groups are, I think, one of the most important services we offer. But we also have a directory of LGBTQ-friendly like businesses and service providers. We have community meeting space, and we do have a like 4,000-volume lending library of all LGBTQ fiction and nonfiction, which is a really impressive thing to behold. In our physical space, we have a community food pantry, both food, personal hygiene supplies, other things like COVID rapid tests that we operate in partnership with the River Food Pantry. And then one of our busiest services is what I'm here to talk about today, Wilma's Fund. So you can go to the next slide, please. Before I get into talking about Wilma's Fund, I just want to give you a little bit of context, specifically about Wisconsin's LGBTQ community, and then about our LGBTQ community more generally and the issues that we face with housing insecurity and homelessness. So Wisconsin has a, throughout the state, relatively small LGBTQ community compared to the national average. Obviously in Madison and Dane County, it's a lot larger, a lot higher percentage of the community. But a lot of, one of the things I'll talk about later is that we don't have a lot of data actually about our LGBTQ community, which for me coming from a science background is always interesting, because I want to know exactly the number of people that we can reach, who needs our help, and how best we can help them. So this is something that we're working on constantly. The queer community in Madison, the LGBTQ community in Wisconsin, is on average younger, and also much more diverse than the general population. So a higher percentage of the LGBTQ community are people of color. And go on to the. We also, as a result of a lot of things, but primarily discrimination and the impact that that has on our lives, LGBTQ plus people are underemployed or unemployed at higher rates. We struggle with housing and food insecurity at higher rates. And we also, because in this country, health insurance is most often tied to employment, are under or uninsured at really high rates. So we face a lot of economic disadvantages that are really broadly the result of, you know, individual discrimination, but also systemic discrimination as well. And one of these areas where this shows up the most is in housing insecurity and homelessness. So the LGBTQ community generally experiences housing insecurity or instability and homelessness at much higher rates. And this is really particularly pronounced in the transgender community. So almost 10% of all transgender adults have experienced homelessness at some point in their lives. It's a really staggeringly high amount when we think about it's, you know, 1%, I think, around 1% for the cisgender population. And these impact the community at really high rates because housing is tied to employment, it's tied to your economic status, and all of these kind of systemic disadvantages that impact LGBTQ people because of discrimination manifest themselves a lot of the times in our struggles with finding and securing housing. Part of this is also the fact, and this ties directly into why Wilma's Fund was created, a lot of LGBTQ people also feel very uncomfortable in traditional communal housing or homeless shelters. So I've talked with a lot of people, and the shelters in Madison, the staff there work really hard on learning themselves about what they can do, and they have welcoming policies, but that still doesn't necessarily translate into physical or emotional safety for people who use their services. And so most of the trans people that I work with at Outreach that come in and are asking us about Wilma's Fund services are asking us about that because they've been either, you know, victimized in homeless shelters or just don't feel safe entering into gendered spaces in the first place. Most trans people, so like 70% of trans people who've experienced homelessness and have stayed in homeless shelters, say that they've experienced discrimination or mistreatment because of their gender identity. So this is a really, really serious issue for our community and for the community in general as well. And out of that is where Wilma's Fund came from. So Wilma's Fund was created by Donald Haar, who performs drag under the name Wilma Flintstone. And Wilma decided that as part of, so Wilma's been performing drag under different names and things for over 30 years, but she decided that getting back into drag as I think she got a little bit older and was working at Salvation Army but then left, she needed a reason to do it other than just wanting to do it, and so decided to start performing drag again and donating the profits from our shows, the tips and all of that, to help provide short-term housing for folks that are experiencing homelessness, for LGBTQ folks specifically. And so Wilma's Fund became a program of outreach in 2011. So it's a little over 10 years old now. And it's been going strong ever since then. Before 2020, so before the COVID-19 pandemic really started off, Wilma's Fund would on average give out around $10,000 a year. And that's mostly in the form of short-term grant, short-term immediate needs, so like hotel stays or helping people who maybe have fallen behind on their rent or something like that. But in 2020, when the pandemic started, what happened was that people that are already marginalized, those in the LGBTQ community, and especially the LGBTQ community of color, became even further marginalized, so became unemployed at very disproportionate rates and struggled with employment and things like that at much more disproportionate rates than most other communities that we saw. And so the needs were much, much higher. Fortunately, there was also a lot of additional government funding for helping to meet those needs. But whereas Wilma's Fund had given out around $10,000 a year for the first several years of its existence, all of a sudden in the pandemic, it became $40,000, $50,000. And even though now we're in this period where a lot of the restrictions have ended, things are back to normal, right? Not at all. But a lot of that sort of specific COVID funding has dried up. A lot of those specific assistance programs are no longer available. The need is still there. People are still feeling the economic impact of having lost a job or lost housing during the pandemic. And so even though this year things have been open to the public and, you know, the employment situation is getting better, there's still tremendous need in our community, in the LGBTQ community specifically, for help with housing and help with creating stability. And so as of, I put this together on July 20th, so these numbers are actually higher than that now. Like, I think last time I looked at our accounting, it was closer to $30,000 that we've given out already this year. So we're helping a lot of people still. There's tremendous need for this program. And we're fortunate at Outreach that we have the community support from places like Prairie UU Society, from UW Health and other community leaders to help us continue to provide services for this number of people. But it's really interesting to me because we still are helping this tremendous number of people. And when I look at the data, again, science background, big data nerd, when I look at this, I see the exact same patterns that we see nationally, even though we don't have demographic data on concerning gender identity and sexual orientation. We don't have a lot of those data for the community in Madison, for the homeless community, but Wilma's Fund clients mirror those patterns very specifically. So about a third of the clients that I work with are transgender. Over half of the people who come to us looking for assistance are people of color. Most specifically, half of our clients are self-identify as Black or African American. So this is, we can see national systemic patterns mirrored in the people that come to us asking for help. That people of color, that people who are already marginalized, trans people of color, really are bearing a disproportionate share of the economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and of discrimination in housing and things like that as well. So what we do to try to address some of these needs, we provide short-term assistance, and it's really, at this point, it's just, that's what we've done, and it's what's been effective for us, and it's also what we have the capacity to do. So our average award for folks is around $500. That translates into a week-long hotel stay. For some folks, it's, you know, help with rent, or a security deposit for somewhere that they live. We also, on a case-by-case basis, will help with other things. So we've helped with utility bills for folks, medical bills, especially during the height of the COVID pandemic. We were doing a lot of help with other sources of financial stress for people, even like auto repairs or transportation needs and stuff like that. One of the other things that I think that's really important that we do is provide referrals to other services in Madison. Because there are a lot of social service organizations here, but sometimes it's hard for people to know where to turn. And so if I can talk to somebody on the phone or they come into us and I can say, here are a list of places where you can go get a hot meal. Here are a list of places that you can find some help with securing more stable housing, things like that. I think that's, you know, the short-term financial assistance is a really important piece, but also connecting people to the LGBTQ community and then to the broader community in Madison as well, so that people can start to build some of the stability that we all need to survive. Like I said, Wellness Fund is a short-term program, so sometimes it can feel like we're just like putting a Band-Aid on a broken arm in some ways when it's like, here's a hotel stay for someone who's dealing with chronic homelessness. But it's part of a system of building to address long-term needs. And that includes making people aware of these systemic barriers that exist that prevent LGBTQ people from living our lot, just existing in the same way that other people can exist. And that includes the lack of legal protection. So even in a state like Wisconsin, where we were the first in the country to pass a statewide ban on discrimination based on sexual orientation, there's not statewide protections for people based on gender identity. It's not included in the same thing. It's also making people aware that there are restrictions on government funding. One of the reasons why Wellness Fund is community funded is because we can't accept money from HUD because we only work with LGBTQ people. If we wanted to accept government funding, we would have to work with everyone that came through our doors. Falls under the discrimination guidelines. There's also the rapidly shifting political landscape for queer people in this country, where we all follow the news to a certain extent, and we know that things can become very dangerous very quickly based on who's in power in your state, in your county, nationally. So it's kind of part of understanding that this is a holistic picture. We need to understand all of the factors that can influence the well-being of LGBTQ people in our community so that we can work towards education and addressing those things and breaking down these systemic barriers that exist. So like I said, I was raised UU, and it was really fun to do the like speaker application for this because it was like, select which principal, and I was like, I know these. I remember those days in RE. And it's really interesting because it forced me to think about them in a way that I haven't in a long time. And I think it's really, you know, obviously we fall very neatly within that second principle, but also the first and many of the others, right? So part of helping everyone, part of, you know, this commitment to justice and equity and compassion, it builds on the first principle, right? It builds on recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of every person that we meet. And so pulling all of these pieces together, right? Recognizing the individual dignity of someone, treating them with compassion, and carrying that to a community level, the inherent dignity of different communities, working with each other with compassion in our hearts and carrying that through everything that we do, whether it's our day-to-day personal interactions or the ways that we step up and advocate for people and use our privilege to advocate for marginalized communities. And the last thing I want to say too is really the importance of building on that, our interpersonal actions to affect systemic change, because we have direct control over how we treat other people, how we work with other people, how we use our individual privilege, and that builds to create community change. And I think that that's one of the most important things and one of the most important pieces of a program like Wellness Fund is that it is individually based, but we're hopefully helping people get some sense of stability, and then they're using that to go on, become more secure in their lives, and help others as well, so it spreads. And I think that that's one of the most important things when, you know, we are a program that addresses short-term needs, but long-term success can only come from building on short-term stability. And I think, you know, I'll share a story of one of the people that was one of the first, I've only worked at Outreach since March of this year. One of the first people that I talked to that was a Wellness Fund client was a trans woman who was recently released from jail and had just really no clue where to start with almost everything about like being trans, accessing care, accessing stable housing, because they were incarcerated, had been released, and were sort of just like, here's your temporary housing. After that, figure it out. And so she had been living in her car and, you know, relying on family for assistance, but didn't really have great relationships with most of her family. And so she came to us and we had a really good discussion about what types of help she would like. And we decided, okay, yeah, a hotel room, get some stability, you know, have a place, a bed, so you're not sleeping in your car for a little while, so that that'll give you a springboard to like look for other things. She did that. She comes in regularly to get stuff out of our food pantry. And two or three days ago, I say that and I'm just like, I have no sense of time right now because we're getting ready for the Magic Pride Festival, and so every day is a blur. But very recently she came back in and just stopped in to say hi and check some books out from the library. And she's like, I don't want to distract you if you're busy, but I want to let you know I signed a lease. And I was like, always, literally, anyone who ever has good news for me, like, interrupt whatever I'm doing. And so she was very open and shared that and has stayed in really good contact with us. And I think that's the type of success that I think, you know, some people, we provide them with some amount of assistance and we never hear from them again. But other people really do become integrated into the community at Outreach. They come to our social and support group meetings. They start volunteering for us. And I think that's one of the biggest strengths, is building those community connections. So because as queer people, we often feel alienated from our families, we have to create our own families. And that's part of what we do, right? Is we bring people into our family with this. And speaking of community and bringing people into the family, also love that this ties really well in with the story that was shared today, the book that was read. And it's on your calendar too. But August 21st is the Magic Pride Festival. And I always encourage folks to come out to events like this, not only because it helps us with fundraising, but it is just a really good way to be in community. And I think that's so important. And a lot of us learned that lesson really the hard way during the pandemic when we were forced to isolate, that community is important. Seeing each other, experiencing each other, and just existing in a shared space and seeing the diversity of our community too. Those are vitally important things, and I'm really glad that we get to have the in-person Magic Festival this year for those reasons. So, thank you so much for inviting me to come and share a little bit about Wilma's Fund with you and about myself as well. I don't know if there's discussion, questions, what do we?
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So now is the time that our community dedicates for discussion around the focus of today's service. We rely on our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcome and relationships are valued. If you're in the room and feel comfortable, please come up to the podium so those on Zoom who can see who is speaking. Also, introducing yourself with your name and pronouns is welcomed. And if waiting, you can line up on either side aisle. Otherwise, please raise your hand and one of our helpers can bring you a microphone. And if you're online, please type into the chat and the Zoom helper will read the discussion or question or comment aloud for you. So let us know if you have any comments or questions or anything you'd like to contribute. Come on back up, AJ. We want to keep hearing from you. This is not my show. Okay.
So Renee, she, her. Quick announcement is that Prairie has a booth at the Pride Festival, which I think is, I don't know, have we had a booth before? Not in the last, maybe never, we don't know. So this is really exciting. Woo! I'm volunteering there, and you should too. I think it's 1 to 6 p.m., right? Is that, so we're doing like shifts, two-hour shifts. We're doing like face painting and talking about Prairie. Yeah, I bought a free mom hug shirt. I talked to Jason. He did not want a shirt, though. He's like, I don't know about strangers hugging me. And I said, that's fine, honey. You don't have to have the shirt. I will wear the shirt. You take care of the kids. So that's the plan. So we're going to be in there for a couple hours. Well, Jason won't. He'll be like wandering around with our kids. So anyway, so if you want to volunteer, let Peggy know. She's the point person. I think she has emailed either Views or News, but if you don't have her email, you can also talk to me and I can get you her email. But I'm really excited, and it was really funny because I was just thinking of emailing about having a booth, although it was way too late to apply. And then Peggy said, oh, we have a booth. And I was like, yes, woohoo! So anyway, so definitely come. It'll be after the service. So you can come to the service in the morning, grab lunch, and then head to the Pride Festival in the afternoon. So we're excited. I'm excited.
Eileen Nettleton. So I really appreciate your emphasis with the Wilmus Fund on housing, the idea of housing first, mm-hmm. in terms of helping people have stability. And I'm sure you could do a whole nother, segment about this, but I'm curious about the economics of, I think the whole idea of providing transitional funding is really important, and you have flexibility because you're not part of the government. You don't have things stipulated about what you can and cannot do, and that flexibility is really good. I'm curious about how you tie people into looking for jobs. You mentioned education, mm-hmm. and I'm also curious about jobs because one of the things that I've learned from working with the League of Women Voting Voters in looking at housing needs is the economics of how much rent costs in Madison and how much you have to make in order to pay that rent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just blows my mind. So I'm curious how you're looking at helping people transition with jobs.
Thank you for that question. So there are a few things. So Wilmus Fund is primarily just help with housing, but like I said, one of the other things we do is provide people with connections to other community organizations. And one of the places I like to try to send people, both because they help with employment, but because they also have a lot of assistance with finding more permanent housing, is the Dane County Job Center. But then also for a lot of people who come to us with concerns about employment, there is just a lot of referring people to other organizations. We do also have, you know, for people that maybe just need access to a computer so that they can even apply for jobs, we have a small cyber center in our office. We have two computers and printers and things like that. And then it's something that we're continuously working on, right? So for a lot of trans people in particular, and this is just because this is the lived experience that I bring to the table, having legal documents that don't match your name or your gender that you present can result in a lot of employment discrimination, even though technically that's not allowed. You know, it's hard to prove something like that. And so one of the things that we are constantly seeking funding for, you know, through other community grants and things like that, is the ability to help people pursue legal name changes, document changes. Sometimes it's, you know, through the Madison Area Transgender Association, we're working on a couple of programs that hopefully we'll get some funding for in the coming months, for helping people access gender-affirming care, you know, professional clothing that matches their gender, because even though I have a whole slew of feelings about professional clothing, it is highly gendered, and it's sort of one of our social expectations that people look a certain way when they come in for a job interview or something like that. So it's definitely on our mind, and it's something that we're really trying to address, but it's one of those main things, again, like we refer people to other community organizations that work with employment. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Molly Plunkett. I hope nobody could tell I was kind of trying to sidle in to the microphone because I left my car windows down on my car, which I never do, and it's like, I'm totally soaked on the backside. Anyway, I had both comments. First, I wanted to thank AJ. I thought that was a really excellent presentation. I wanted to comment that before there was the festival, there was a gay pride parade for many years in Madison, and Prairie was almost always a participant in that. I know I've done it with other people from the congregation many times, always trying to find our banner to carry.
Did you find it? I just put the banner from the locked office. It's on top of the piano, and Peggy's going to grab it.
Great. Okay. Okay. And I think also we got involved with Wilma's Fund because Prairie has, as a social action focus, been working for many years on homelessness issues. So that's why Wilma's was, you know, particularly appropriate and suggested, I think, to us by Lynn Curry. But I just wondered, there is a question in here. What if you could talk a little bit more about what people might see if they came to the festival,
yeah.
AJ? Okay,
absolutely.
Thank you.
So yeah, the festival is, I think we've said, August 21st, 1 to 6 p.m. at Warner Park. There are this year, so 2019 was our first festival instead of parade, and that shift was made for a few reasons, but we've really noticed that parades are wonderful for seeing people. A festival is really good for experiencing community and hanging out with each other and getting to have actual time to connect with the people that are there with booths like you all will be. So this year is going to be much, much bigger festival than I think in 2019, in part because everyone's very eager to get together. But we have, I think, over 100 different vendors, which includes nonprofits and information, some sales vendors, 14 food trucks that are going to be there, so plenty of food. A stage show, so from 1 to 6, there'll be performances. Sometimes it'll be just DJ music. But we have a lot of, different LGBTQ performers from the area that are going to be performing there. There's a whole separate, kids area that the Children's Museum is going to be helping us out with. I'm trying to even remember all of the things now. I've been very narrowly focused on one aspect, which has been coordinating volunteers. And so my brain is just laser focused on that. And then we do also have a tent in an area that is for queer and trans people of color so that there's kind of a respite space and a space for them to be in community with each other. Always. I will never turn down someone who wants to volunteer to help with something. but yeah, we would if folks want to volunteer, we would love that.
Question from Zoom. What is the ratio of staff to volunteer hours at Wilma's? Is there a high engagement by volunteers? Also, thanks very much for the presentation. This is from Rachel.
So right now, Outreach has 7 staff people, and only 3 of us are full-time, so a really small organization as far as staff goes. Because of being closed to the public during the pandemic, we also, right now, as far as in-office, only have 4 front desk volunteers, so actually festival volunteers. But if anyone would like to volunteer and hang out at Outreach, help us with answering phones, greeting clients, we really have a need for front desk volunteers and folks that can do that type of volunteering as well. That's one of the most important things. I always tell our front desk volunteers this when we meet, is they're the face of the organization in a lot of ways. Because I'm in my office, which does have a large window that looks out over really the community center. But I'm in there working most of the time. So when people come in the front door, they see our volunteers first. And when people call us on the phone, they're usually talking to a volunteer. So as far as actually administering things for Wilma's Fund, I've been the coordinator for that since mid-April, and so I'm the one that does the intakes with people, does the follow-up, does all the, a lot of the details about payments and everything. But a lot of times the first person that people talk to when they call Outreach looking for assistance or come in looking for assistance is either a volunteer or one of our other staff people. But as far as putting numbers to that, I'm not 100% sure how that would look. Because it very much just depends on the day and who's at the office and kind of all those wonderful things.
Well, thank you, AJ. That was amazing. I hope you'll stay with us afterwards, and I'm sure there'll be other questions. All right. Well, I don't have a transition line here, but that's okay. We're coming into our offertory now. Our sharing of our offering this quarter is with Wilma's Fund.
which, as you now know a little bit more about, provides assessments and assistance to LGBTQ plus people who are experiencing homelessness, as well as to support to prevent homelessness in this population. The offertory is Rejoice France by Telemann, performed by Amber, and the folks will now come around and help or pass out. Yeah. One other note, we are obviously, this is a very much lay-led community, and we have done a lot of work to make sure that we are being accessible through COVID, through the technology, through the power of technology. And can we please give John a round of applause? He has done so much to make sure that we can make that Zoom experience better and better for folks that either can't be here or just are not comfortable yet or just can't be here. So thank you so much for that. Our closing words are by Senator Tammy Baldwin and will be read by Margaret Moses.
There will not be a magic day when we wake up and it's now okay to express ourselves publicly. We make that day by doing things publicly until it's simply the way things are.
Ain't that the truth? All right. Our closing music is hymn number 134 in this book, Our World is One World. And again, you're invited to stand as you are willing and able to sing along with the music. Thank you. At this time, we are stopping the recording.